So we're going to talk about the nonprofit considerations with respect to joint ventures. And Daphne's going to talk about that.
Yep. Yeah, so as I was thinking through this, you know, I started realizing that in transitioning to in-house counsel, I definitely am thinking more about it from the perspective of the entity itself as opposed to all of the legal ramifications. And so, you know, piggybacking off of kind of what Jerry was talking about, I think my goals are kind of thinking through how are we going to operationalize this and, you know, what's the potential for the breakup on the back end. So I think when you're putting together kind of or thinking through what the ultimate goal or mission is for the transaction, and this is mainly with respect to joint ventures and less about sales, you know, you definitely want to put some thought into the structure. You know, who's going to, is this going to be more of an arrangement where we're talking about coming together in a particular market or for a particular service and how we work through that, or are we truly going to form an entity that, you know, two parties come in and invest, and then in connection with that, what's the kind of equity interest split? I think a lot of times, and we'll talk more about this when we talk about the deadlock piece, but the parties come in thinking we're going to be 50-50 partners in this joint venture, and how does that really play out in terms of how you organize yourselves? Who's going to control it? And if you're looking to for one entity to consolidate, what are the kind of protections that you put in place, and what are the requisite rights that particular party has to have? Will there be other investors that might drive how you organize the venture itself? If you're going to have, you know, a venture between the two major players, and then that venture then may invest in other entities where you might allow other outside investors, maybe in the operating entity, which is, you know, similar to a model that we often deploy. I think it's probably on an exhibit, but, you know, a lot of the nonprofits they could have ethical or religious directives that you kind of have to think about. How are you going to make sure that those are attended to as you move forward in making sure that gets, because it's not really going to be handled through the documentation, but it's going to be handled through what the parties are doing at the operational level. So the policies come into play, making sure that how are you going to manage that going forward so that there's not unexpected changes to those policies as turnover happens. Maybe people are there at the organization that don't recognize why certain things were built in and baked in.
And I think it's important to note that those kinds of policy considerations are things that take time and can be a pacing item between the parties and the transaction closing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Or they're not well thought out, and then you have the issues on the back end.
Right.
And then, you know, there's often competing interests when you're talking about coming together. You've got organizational strategy versus investment interests. So in particular, if you have a nonprofit coming together with a for-profit, the nonprofit may be more focused on its particular mission, whereas the, you know, for-profit is definitely looking at investment opportunities that are lucrative and that yield a financial return. And then so there can be this tension as it relates to discussions on the governing board, where maybe the nonprofit is willing to do more in connection with its overall mission versus, you know, things that maybe the for-profit entity is willing to do. And I don't remember if you're going to get into it more, Jerry, but use of tax-exempt bond finance space. We tend to see the issues arise there more in connection with these HOPD conversions, where maybe a nonprofit has recognized that the HOPD is not really the model that they want to use for providing certain services, because it's just lends itself more to the ambulatory space, and so they're considering converting that space into a freestanding facility and having that be part of the joint venture. And so back to kind of what Jerry was talking about, you have to go through the logistics of making sure that, you know, the nonprofit's not blowing anything there in connection with use of bond finance space.
So Jerry is going to talk about the Texas AG process and walk us through that.
Yeah, so on the Texas Attorney General, just following the outline. So the Attorney General, and this comes up in the issue, if we're going to sell a hospital or merge a hospital, then does what jurisdiction and regulation does the Attorney General have over that? And now they take the position that they've got jurisdiction, and they take the strong position that they are very relevant in that kind of transaction. There was, and there have been efforts to have legislation passed in Texas that actually would put in place a statutory approval process. A lot of states have a statutory approval process for a hospital sale. That legislation's failed, because I remember it, because I actually testified on behalf of the Texas Hospital Association against it, but I can't even remember why we did. But in any event, the legislation didn't pass. I was reflecting on kind of issues we've had, and we're going to get to those, that in my career, there have been like five or six different attorney generals. And I'm not bragging about that, because all it does is just reflect that I'm old. But each attorney general really has kind of a different view. And in some, the charitable trust section is viewed one way, and then the next attorney general comes, and charitable trust section may be viewed a different way.